This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, greetings. Good to see so many of you here. Yeah.
Here we are live at the 2011 Homebrewers Conference in San Diego. It's the biggest and best homebrew conference ever here. And you're all part of it. And you're here standing with all these smiling faces. There's Cole. He's one of the organizers. Got a spectacular job. Thank that man right there for all the hard work that's gone into making this possible. A lot of people worked on it, but he was one, along with Lauren, the two guys that really made this happen. So without guys like that, things like this don't get to happen. So pretty cool. And, also our sponsors, yes. Blickman Engineering, they're right down here over in this corner. So I don't want you to leave right now, but as soon as we're done with the show, I want you to go over there and thank those guys, especially John Blickman, for paying for this show so you don't have to.
Yeah.
He's been a longtime sponsor now, and
he's got the new Turbo Tower of Power.
it controls
your mash.
Controls your mash, right. There you go.
Pumps, recirculates. It's a good thing. It's cool. I got one. I love it.
You see what I'm working with here? You see this, folks? All right. But, make sure you thank our sponsors. A lot of great sponsors here in the room that have worked with us over the years. White Labs and More Beer. And there's Northern Brewer, longtime sponsor of the Jamil Show. They're down at the end cap here. So stop by on all those. And if you like the program we have, Hop Tech is a sponsor. Beersmith has been in the past, I think.
Yeah.
And, if you like this stuff that we do, make sure that the sponsors know about it, because if they're not paying for it, Justin won't feed himself, and then he goes cries in the corner, and the show is no longer. So
I cry on the corner of a street because I get paid, though.
Right.
To do that. Yeah. I cry where I can earn some money.
Right, and that isn't allowed to be recorded. It's illegal or something like that. Yeah.
It's weird that every year when we do this, more and more of the sponsors in the hospitality suite are sponsors of the Brewing Network. We're getting close to 100%.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Yeah.
And that was a subtle hint to everyone in the room who isn't sponsoring the show.
Well, we're having a great time. We went to the Brewing Network anniversary party last night.
We sure did, yeah.
I know for myself, I had a grand time. We were pouring some Heretic beer there.
And, those were good,
That was a thrilling thing for me.
Dancing.
And it was just cool to see all the people, all the listeners. It's something like that, they're not too afraid to come up and say hi. And I got a tip for you. If you just see any one of us out walking around, don't be shy. Just come up and say hello. If we're in the middle of wiping or something, don't. But other than that, come up and say hi and introduce yourself. We love it. It's nice to, have people that are instant friends that appreciate what you do. So don't be shy.
Always happy to meet you guys. I mean, I was on the other side of the fence once many years ago and, shaking Dave Miller's hand and Charlie's hand, and it's like Randy and Ray.
That sounds really kind of weird. You're
dirty.
On the other side of the fence, shaking hands.
Yeah.
I was hiding behind the bushes, shaking hands.
The Wilson thing, I guess,
Okay. Now, how about that Heretic beer last night? Did anybody get some of it?
Yeah. All right.
We got to launch it here at the Brewing Network. You know, those guys over there at Brewing TV scooped us on that Jameel was doing a brewery. So Jameel felt bad for me and let us launch his beer
right,
at BNA 6.
That's the first public tasting of the beer. Yeah, the Heretic Beer was here at the Brewing Network anniversary party. So cool things like that happen. So, you know, BNA 7, you're going to want to be there. That's going to be in Seattle. You're going to want to get yourself there for that.
Yeah.
So don't miss the conference. Don't miss
Start walking now.
Yeah, don't miss that. Well, I'll tell you, at the anniversary party last night, some guys come up to me and they go, yeah, I just finished listening to all of the Bruce Strong shows, just caught up this last week. You know, thanks for the great information. Another guy says, yeah, I listened to it too, but you know what's even better? If you listen to it in double speed. I'm like, what? He goes, well, the jokes come that much faster. It's a lot funnier.
Someone played it for me at double speed yesterday. It wasn't enough that he said, that's what I do. And he said, here, I want to show you.
Oh, it's probably the same guy. I don't know. Unless a lot of people are doing it.
It was weird. I felt like we were all on speed.
Right. Is my timing that bad? Am I really going that slow?
But he did have a good point. It sounded pretty good that way. Not like we had done a line of coke and then sat down and did the show.
Right. There you go. So, today, what we're going to be doing is we've got a special guest with us, Greg Doss. He is the QC manager and microbiologist out at Y-East.
Mm-hmm.
And they make some fantastic products. And those of you who know Greg, he's just a wonderful, generous guy with his time and information, and really brilliant. He knows a lot of stuff and is very very forthcoming and sharing. Hi, Greg.
Wow, that's really kind of you, Jameel.
Yeah, well,
great to have you on the show.
The check cleared.
Thank you.
And so
exactly.
You know, we're all good. We're all good. Now, Greg, I think I met you first back in
Vegas or Orlando.
Yeah.
I was thinking. And, I think this is the eighth year that I've been at the AHA conference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and at the time, I think you guys were considering canceling the Rose Lair altogether. Right?
I believe we did. Actually, we did cancel it. We took it off.
Yeah.
Took it off of the regular lineup for a couple years. And
so I freaked out.
You did?
I'm like, no, you can't do that. It's my favorite.
And you rallied your support, and we got a lot of emails, and it's back.
Right.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Well, and I'm thinking of using that for a commercial batch of beer at Heretic. I'm gonna be using the Rose Lair.
Nice.
And you know, one of the things that I had asked you, you know, when you're doing a commercial brewery, you have to repitch your yeast to make it cost effective, because you know, a pitch of yeast is gonna run you $800, and in order to bring the cost per batch down, you got to be able to repitch it.
Well, imagine your hand gets tired after a while from doing all the smack packs.
Right, yeah, all the smack packs, you know, one after the other. So the interesting thing to me is the Rose Lair blend is a blend of, some Saccharomyces in there, there's some bacteria, a couple of strains of bacteria.
Yeah, there's six different organisms.
Uh-huh.
We've got a Saccharomyces culture, a sherry culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then
sherry
both
fleur.
Sherry
fleur.
Fleur de sherry.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Two Brett cultures, the Lambicus and the Brussellensis, and then also both of our bacteria, the Pediococcus and the Lactobacillus.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
All right.
So all six bugs are working.
And it works beautifully. You know, you can pitch that in, and it's amazing what it'll do to just about any wort. It gives it a real, you know, Flanders, Rodenbach type of character to it. I really love it. So I want to be using this. And my question is, well, Greg, can I, you know, repitch this? I was thinking, you know, what would happen? You know, the popular belief is always that, you know, things are going to skew heavily one way or another. But I was, you know, started thinking about it, and the more I thought about it, because I think somebody asked us on our show.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, no, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. And I'm not sure anybody's really done the research into it to determine how it's gonna drift. Because, you know, people say, well, the bacteria would take over, and you'd get, you know, sour too much or too quickly, or I don't know. I think everything's going to kind of find its level.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get, you know, the yeast will do a certain thing, and the bacteria will do their thing, you know, after they're done. And pretty much it.
Well, you know, we talked about this in San Francisco when we were at the CBC and we were talking about it. And I hadn't necessarily thought about it in the same way you had thought about it. Generally, when I get the question of blends, can we make a starter? Mm-hmm. This is generally on the homebrew scale.
Right.
And I typically say, no, you don't want to make a starter with a blend because the cultures are going to get out of proportion. We're putting those cultures, we're growing them up separately, blending them together at proportions that we want to produce the style of beer that we know that's going to produce. So if you were to grow that up in a starter culture, we know that the growth rates of the different organisms are different. And in a very small starter culture, I think you're going to push the Saccharomyces culture. That's going to grow the fastest and really kind of dominate. The Brett and the bacteria are probably going to be suppressed a little bit by that growth. And in that, say you're making a starter in a 48-hour or 24-hour period, you're really going to get out of proportion.
That's because of the starter parameters are favoring the yeast,
the aeration versus
and not the bacteria?
Well, absolutely. If there's aeration involved, then you're really going to suppress both the bacteria. The Brett cultures just typically are fairly slow to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the alcohol production and the CO2 production by the Saccharomyces culture, which is at a higher proportion anyway that we're putting in there, it's going to suppress the other bugs a little bit. So you're going to grow more sac, and which having more sac is necessarily a bad thing. Everybody wants more sac.
See, everybody expected me to say something, you know? But look, the guy from Y East is taking it on.
Yeah, I thought maybe your microphone was broken for a second, Jamil. I was trying to figure out the problem over here.
But so generally, you're going to have more sac and less of the other bugs that are going to do come in later and do some of the work. Now, in the commercial brewery, you know, the more I thought about this, and then actually we had the conversation this morning about it, and I've been thinking about it all day. I think there's a fair amount of validity to what you're saying, is that after you harvested it at 3 months, 4 months, 2 months, 1 month, you know, depending on what you're going to do, those levels are probably going to come closer into proportion to what we're putting out. We based our
different conditions and conditions that in a way favor it to the level that you want it anyways. If you're getting the right result, then you know,
sure.
Perhaps you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I think there's some validity, and right now I think it's a lot of theory, and I'm interested to see how things come out. I'd like to take what you're harvesting at whatever set times, and maybe you can pull certain samples and then, you know, plate those out and really compare it to what we're originally putting in there and seeing if we can kind of guess. So that's how we put the culture together originally, is that we had a sample of some sour beers, and we extracted we isolated the organisms out, and then also looked at the proportions that we were finding and then grew them up separately and then kind of blended them back to hit those proportions. And so our original culture is really based on what you're saying,
right?
That was something that had been fermented and was, you know, was sitting there, and whether or not that was spontaneous, most likely it was a spontaneous fermentation. That's what we were able to extract.
So it might be a natural balance.
I got a question.
Let's do this. Let's take a short break, and we come back. Then your question, you can ask it.
Okay.
All that. And all you folks out here, you got a beer? You enjoying the show? Come on! Live it up! Back after this!
Keep your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back. From the stovetop to a camp burner to some kind of brew stand, most homebrewers follow some version of this progression. With each move, a homebrewer will often have to change a lot, if not all, of their equipment. Until now, Blickman Engineering brings you the top-tier brewing stand, the only brewing stand that grows with you. For example, buy a top-tier floor-standing burner now, and it'll bolt right to your top-tier brewing stand when you're ready for all-grain brewing. The top-tier brewing stand is perfect for 5-gallon to 20-gallon batch sizes. Its modular design is adjustable and accommodates everything from small footprint coolers up to 30-gallon pots.
How does the top-tier brewing stand do it? At its core is a strong, heat-treated, and anodized aluminum main post. On all four sides are built-in T-slots for the adjustable heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves and beefy burner tiers. The tiers accommodate any manufacturer's pots or coolers up to 21 inches in diameter. Best of all, not only does the top-tier brewing stand grow with your skills and equipment, but it easily knocks down for long-term storage or transport, too. The top-tier brewing stand from Blickman Engineering. Learn more at BlickmanEngineering.com and to find a local Blickman retailer. And start brewing from the top tier.
Hey, BN Army, you think you're badass? Well, you are, kind of, like badass, but without the balls to blow something up. Hop Tech in patriotic Dublin, California recognizes your nearly badassness with a BN Army discount on every order. But there's something those boys and girls in the real Army should know. If you have an APO address or a scan of an active PX card, Hop Tech salutes you as an actual badass and offers their things with a 15% discount on every purchase. That's the Hop Tech way of saying thanks. Thanks to all active military personnel. 15% off ingredients, kits, equipment, as well as games, books, gifts, and more, all at hoptech.com. Whichever army you're a member of, any branch of the military, or the BN Army, HopTech in Dublin says thank you with great discounts. Call 800-DRY-HOPS, visit the store in Dublin, California, or go to hoptech.com. HopTech, serving homebrewers for 28 years.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go.
You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a homebrewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
Woohoo! Woo.
Speaking of nuts.
Speaking of nuts.
You know, they have silicone grips now on the Blickman Quick Connects.
Nice!
They are. They're, you can actually...
That's a good
you
idea.
You
speaking
can actually,
of nuts.
Take them off.
You know. Really? It's a crazy idea, or the nuts are silicone coated now.
That's, yeah. You have a lot of experience with silicone nuts. Or is it, you know.
I had a friend who had testicular cancer, and they put in like a fake testicle in him with made of like Delrin or some high tech plastic, Teflon or whatever, yeah. It would be.
Really?
And he said it was fine, except like he'd get into the hot tub or whatever, and it would soak up a huge amount of heat. And then later on, he'd be laying there, and things radiating heat all night long. He's like, oh, it was miserable, you know? So like, all of a sudden, it felt really hot.
Oh, man.
So, there's a little piece of advice for you there. If you're going to have a testicle replaced, you know, make sure it's one that doesn't...
keep it iced.
Different heat coefficient. Or leave it, you know, hanging outside the tub while you're in. Whatever it takes. Speaking of Blickman, we got a couple of Blickman Beer Geek pocket protectors. Who's a Blickman Beer Geek? Anybody? All right. Here you are. Here you go. You guys having a good time?
Yeah!
That's what I like to hear. Don't be shy. Don't be quiet. You guys get yourself some Rogue beer right over here. They're fantastic beer, and I think John's right over there pouring, too. The beer is excellent. So, John, you had a question for Greg before.
Yes, I did. Well, you know, speaking of the harvesting of Roselair or a similar bacterial yeast blend, in a professional size fermenter, you've got all the yeast flocculating out, settling down into the cone. You extract the yeast from that cone, and do bacteria flocculate? I mean, are they collecting down in the cone like the yeast, or are you end up leaving all the bacteria behind if you collect from the fermenter that way?
No, the bacteria will flocculate and then sediment out. It's a little bit different mechanism than what yeast is going through. Yeast is going through generally a depletion of sugar, and when that sugar is depleted, then
changes their charge.
There's a couple of factors that are going on. They then agglutinate and form larger flocks, and they will settle out. And it's really sugar dependency is one of the main factors. There's a couple of factors that come into play, other factors.
Okay.
With bacteria, it's not necessarily sugar dependency. If you've made a starter with a lactobacillus or a pediococcus, you'll notice that the sugar doesn't really change that much. You don't have a ton of sugar depletion. Those will stay pretty high. You can actually make your starters at maybe 10, 20, or even a little bit lower. And a fair amount of that sugar will be left over and in that starter, and the cells will flock and settle out.
And they flock based on pH mainly? Or some other factor?
I guess I'm a little bit embarrassed that I don't necessarily have the right the answer for that. I think I don't know what the mechanism. It seems like it's a cell density dependent. And so they're going to hit one to two times 10 to the eighth density. And once they kind of reach that density, they don't really keep going. But then they will settle out, and there's a ton of sugar left. The pH is coming down, and whether or not that cell density is hitting that point at the same time that the pH is coming down to, whether you're at maybe 3.1, 2.9 to 3.1 is usually when those things are going to finish out.
I've heard there's a certain level that the lactobacillus and things will continue to work at, and then past that point, they pretty much stop, and there's no more souring. Or
maybe it's a group consciousness sort of thing.
It's like lactic Borg. So do you have the Borg working in your lab now?
That's the old hippie in Palmer that no one knows about.
Exactly. So I'm not sure what the mechanism is exactly, but it's it'd be interesting to look into a little bit more. There's not a lot of a lot of research, at least on the beer side, into the lactobacillus or pediococcus.
Right.
There's more and more coming out, but I would guess that you could probably go to like an agricultural side or some other disciplines that might have a little more information on lactic acid bacteria and what's making them actually flock out.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, and I, part of this that got you involved in this was I was thinking, okay, maybe I can get some free lab work out of you. And, and maybe there's like another, talk at CBC so I get like free CBC entrance or something, You do the work.
And you get
I would
take
some
credit.
Of the glory. Yeah. And then, I would use that to get myself a free entry. So I save myself $400.
Yeah, well, perfect. You can get some free beer tasting out of me. Yeah.
Right. So, I was curious, if you could describe for the audience how it is that you would take a culture. Let's say I sent you a sample of beer.
Yeah.
How is it you're going to determine, what the levels are of, various strains of yeast or bacteria, and you're going to actually count those? How do you identify each of those?
Well, what we do is we take that and we would, it probably kind of depends on the density of the sample, but we're probably going to plate that sample at full strength and basically just on flood plates. We're probably going to use a couple different medias and then we'll probably do some serial dilutions as well. And so we'll kind of be thinning things out. So if the Saccharomyces is really high, then it's not covering the whole plate and we'll be able to see what else is there. We'll figure out what dilution worked best to figure out. And then we'll have a proportion. you know, and then we can kind of work backwards. And
so you keep strict track of how you're diluting it, so you can work backwards and say, well, we diluted it this many times, and we're only seeing a few cells, but we know exactly how much we've diluted it by, so that tells us how much there. You're using specific types of media, which some will favor yeast only, some will favor, you know, bacteria, some will favor, you know, it'll kill off all the yeast and no yeast can grow. So anything that's growing is bacteria, and then you can look for telltale shapes, sizes, stains, things like that.
It sounds like you've got it. You've got it exactly. So what we'll do is we'll use a couple of broad spectrum medias, and some of those will have some stain in them, some of them won't. Some of them will have some compounds that inhibit yeast, and some won't. And through the different medias, and then morphologically looking at them, one on the plate, because they're all going to grow a little bit different on the plate. You're going to have some that are growing larger. They'll be white. They'll maybe pick the dye up differently. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty decent method to actually tell the difference between different cultures.
Once you know what it looks like, then, you know, from your pure culture, you know exactly what it looks like when it grows. You know, you can just say, oh, well, we know that's, you know, our strain of lactobacillus.
Sure, but right? we'd probably look in under, the next step would then be to look under the scope. And so we got a morphological distinction on a plate, and then looking under a scope. So then we're actually looking at the morphological of the cell, individual cells. And then if we want to take it a step further, then we can ID them, and we usually farm that out to other labs to get that work done. So then we'll take those cultures, the individual isolates, streak those out, and so we have an exact culture, and then we can ID them or do whatever else we want.
Right.
And then, like you said, then we'll work backwards and grow them up separately and then blend them back to the proportion that we wanted, if you wanted the different proportions.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this case, then we'll just know what proportions that you're getting at different times for this. Sounds like you want to do a study.
Right. Well, and we could pull you samples at different points.
Yeah,
and let
absolutely.
You know exactly when and where. And one of the interesting things, and one of the things that I thought back to that actually gave me the thought that this was possible was, I was drinking some, this is years ago, I was drinking some bottled Flanders Red products from various breweries. And I decanted off, and there was like, you know, some sludge at the bottom. I decanted off and drank the beer, and I added back starter wort to each of them. And, you know, just, I was like, I was going to grow it up and use it for something. I don't know. I was just kind of playing around. And after a week or so, I decanted these off, and I tasted them, and I was shocked at how much it tasted just like the product I had drank before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was not... I thought it was going to be completely different, and it was very much similar in balance, and I was just shocked, because I figured, well, the yeast is probably dead. It's probably all just bacteria.
Right.
But apparently not.
Apparently. Well, you know, like I mentioned earlier, is that we originally isolated those out of lambic fermentations. Mm-hmm. So the yeast had survived through that, you know, through that fermentation and the long aging process. So,
and I, you know,
kind of bred to that ability.
And I think the thing that kind of then convinced me it wouldn't work was I was thinking, well, you know, a lot of times they're using these in oak, and then they're not actually pitching a culture. It's, you know, it's in the in the wood or whatever, you know, some story like that. And I'm thinking, well, you know, that must control the amount of, you know, that you're inoculating the beer with, and, you know, that's why it turns out with that balance. And so, you know, it's not just going to work to, you know, harvest the slurry off the bottom of the cone and repitch it, but, you know, maybe it will.
Sure. I still think that if you get those bugs in different proportions, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but if you do have them in different proportions, then you're going to have
a different character.
Different character at different times. Now, the end product may be the same end product.
Right.
Now,
through the course of it, 6 months or a year, it may end up at the same point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I know that if you pitch 10 times the amount of Brett, which will, in our Roselaire slurry, there's a fairly low proportion of Brett, low portions of the bacteria as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we were looking for is to try to simulate a natural wild fermentation where maybe stuff is kind of dropping in at fairly low levels. The Saccharomyces is about 50% of what would be going into our standard spec ale yeast. But if you started to jack up the Brett on that, then I know that Brett character after 2 weeks or 3 weeks is going to be pretty significant.
Well, and another point that for me kind of convinced me it wouldn't work initially was I used to pitch a clean ale yeast to start, let that ferment out, and then I would add the Roselair, and I'd get a different result off of that. But again, as I thought about it, if I left it long enough, it eventually, I think, reached the same point as if I had just pitched the Roselair to start. I think I ended up at pretty much the same result after a year. So,
That doesn't surprise me too much, because you figure you're not getting a lot of the Brett or bacteria action in the first, let's say, 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the Saccharomyces is doing all the work. And so right. when your original method of using, like, a cow ale strain, you were basically just taking the Saccharomyces culture that we're putting into the blend and
right.
just making it useless. It's not going to be able to do anything much more than what you were already doing. And now you're just pitching the Brett and the bacteria and then the sherry strain as well at the same proportions. And so they were probably going to be a little inhibited at the start anyway. So now they're going to kind of take off at the same rate that they maybe would have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's an interesting test, though, to run those side-by-side, those two different methods. And that was a question for me. And I remember the first time I had one of your Flanders, you took me out to your motorhome. I don't know where we were. It must have been, or maybe Orlando.
I took him out to the motorhome.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a bad
exactly.
start.
Exactly. Late night, after a bunch of beer, you took me out to your motorhome.
Oh, come on out. It's okay. I've got candy.
Exactly. Exactly. This is all the stuff that I tell my daughter not to do.
It's Jimmy's move.
Yeah, exactly. But you pulled you pulled those nice Flanders out, and then you were telling me that you used the, that ale strain first, and then put in the Roselair.
Right.
So it'd be interesting. My question to you is why are you switching, and why have you decided to switch? Is it something that's easier? Maybe it saves you from buying
right.
yeast from those yeast suppliers out there.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm cheap. I'm lazy. what else you want to know about me? All those reasons. I was getting good results, and, a lot of times you're getting good results without really knowing why, and I was, supposing that this was, kind of the process. And, as I experimented more, I really, learned a lot more. I think I'm comfortable with just pitching the Roselair as it stands. So it's a perfect product just as is. No need to do anything else. You need to watch the amount of oxygen, I think, and temperature. I think those are the critical things.
What are you doing for oxygen?
Well, I'll tell you. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get into that and some other questions I have. I got Heretic temporary tattoos. Anybody wants one, be a heretic, come on up, grab them right here. Help yourself. Back after this.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Where were we? You stole an oak barrel from the Mist of Ravenwood, and Lord Zinfandel the Avenger is in pursuit. Do you drop the barrel and run?
Hell no.
We need it for a Flanders spread.
I'm going to cast Pediococcus Damnathus on the barrel.
Sorry, your ghosts are imprisoned in his winery forever.
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
This sucks.
What do we have here, Orville Rodenbach?
Buzz off, guy. We got a brew session going.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Do you get a long-lasting foam stand when you think about wheat malt? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the pre-prohibition lager.
Perfect for steampunk.
And the single hop best bitter.
Now on cast and 10 forward.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Pintley is your personal beer connoisseur, and you don't even have to leave a tip. Pintley.com learns your taste in beer. Create a free account today and start by rating a few beers. In just a couple of clicks, Pintley will get to know you and your personal preferences. You won't believe how accurate Pintley's amazing algorithm can be as it learns what pleases your palate most. Personal beer recommendations, tasting notes, and now their new app for your Android or iPhone smartphone. Pintley also gives away incredible prizes each month. Prizes like free craft beer for a year. Visit Pintley.com right now to see how it works or to create your own free account. Pintley, a new kind of beer website that only recommends beer you're sure to love. Pintley.com.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty Christmas you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
All right, this is Jamel. We're all having fun here and having a great time with Greg Doss at the NHC. And I wanted to tell you about one of our sponsors, AdamandEve.com. Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about your surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to AdamandEve.com. For a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration, plus a free extra gift so sensual we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type J-A-M-I-L for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use that offer code Jamel, J-A-M-I-L, at AdamandEve.com. And remember, they're a sponsor, and if they get products you like, check them out, and make sure you use that offer code J-A-M-I-L.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew Strong.
All right, you guys having a good time at the San Diego 2011 Hummer Conference? What size shirt is this? It's a large. I'm sorry, it's too small for you. I would have given you a shirt. How about a BN Army hat? Guys, nice and nice and passionate. I like to hear the screams, man.
Smile for the camera, guys.
He screamed, but I mean that was all right. And you look there like you're a large, so there you go. A nice giveaway from the Brewer Network there for you. Enjoy. Look, he's already wearing the hat. It's nice. Advertising right on there.
Perfect.
I told you the $10 you paid for that hat. It's worth every dime to give it to him.
So that's true. That's fine.
People look at him and they go, "Oh yeah,
that's fine."
You don't want to be part of that group.
You know, I'll bill you for $10 next week anyway.
That's right. that's the kind of demographic I want to be part of, and that's why Blickman Engineering is our sponsor. Don't forget, after you're done with this, go down to the Blickman Engineering booth. It's right down here off to our right-hand side, and great folks. And I know John Blickman. He would just appreciate you coming by and saying hi. And
tomorrow morning.
Handling his silicone nuts.
And handling his silicone nuts.
And tomorrow morning he's doing a brewing demonstration also. He told me that I think it's Friday morning.
That's right.
And he was telling me he's doing a whole brewing demonstration, obviously on a top-tier system. So if you want to see how those bad boys work, go check them out tomorrow morning.
Nice.
He's got temperature controllers now that operate the gas burners. And I have one at home, and I used it on my last brew, and it really does work well.
Yeah.
Recirculating and, you know, heating up, using the gas fire to heat up the bottom of the brew pot, pulling that wort out through the false bottom, running it past temperature sensor, and then switching the burner on and off based on the temperature. And
nice.
Slick system. Really
well. I tell you, I'm lazy, as everybody knows.
Yep.
So, having that, something like that for me. And the thing I like about automation is it makes it consistent. So there are times when I'm happy, times when I'm sad, times when I'm sober, times when I'm drunk.
Yep.
Excuse me. And, brewing, those mood swings, those medication fluctuations will, cause me to behave a little differently while I'm brewing. So I may, not be quite so quick to open a valve or do something like that. And it changes the beer. It's amazing the difference. Little things like that. Have in your resulting beer.
And the thing I appreciated about it was, I thought I'd like to do a beta amylase rest, and it was just easy to say, okay, I'll dough in at 145,
dial it in,
and then do a ramp up to alpha, and then I thought to myself, well, heck, I can do a mash out because all I have to do is just push this little button here, raise the temp.
Mm-hmm.
And it kicks in and
watch it go.
And the pump ran for the entire hour and a half mash that I played with, and it worked. I mean, I just had to input the number, and it just ran.
Nice.
It was real easy.
Excellent.
So very very slick system.
So at the very least, go check it out. I think you'll be surprised at some of the stuff that Blickman Engineering makes, and surprised as well if you try the wine yeast products. You try the Roselaire, which is absolutely one of my favorite all time. And the West Yorkshire, I tell you, I told you this. I drank the starter. I dropped some yeast in the toilet. I drank I was like the dog at the toilet bowl. I was like, you can ferment anything with that West Yorkshire, and it tastes fantastic. That is, the Heretic's got to make a beer with that. It's I shouldn't tell you because now the price is going to go up. It's like,
well, just to you.
Special strain. We're having to double the price.
No, I mean, just like the Roselaire, you had a lot to do with the popularity of that strain.
Right.
And I remember that email that I received from you that you were drinking your starters that day.
Right.
Because you liked the flavor of it so much.
It is such a great classic, British yeast character that you don't get in a lot of other yeasts. I mean, in many of the other yeasts, it's a bit subtle. In that one, it's boldly British and just the great balance and a lot of character, and it's just a character that I love.
What are you using that in?
What did I use it on?
What kind of beers are you making with that?
I made a starter, and then actually, we did a show on this. I took a couple of cans of pre-hopped extract, malt extract. Actually, we did the Rigwelter Black Sheep clone show, and I used it for that.
Yep.
And fantastic. And then I was doing this, a couple of cans of pre-hop malt extract, just to see how it worked. Because my theory was that people that are working with this pre-hop malt extract, the reason their beers don't turn out well is lack of fermentation knowledge. They're not using, a quality yeast product. They, it's been sitting on the shelf. It's all this stuff. And lack of sanitation. So all I did was I opened up the cans, poured them into a carboy, I added some water, I shook it up, I poured in some DME, I shook it up, and then I pitched the West Yorkshire. Tasted fantastic. I served it to Justin, I served it to a whole bunch of people. I served it to Dave Sapsis, Grand Master Judge, one of the finest palates I know. I said, what do you think? He's like, he didn't say anything about extract or cans or anything. And everybody was, just blown away by how good it was. Ended up drinking the whole 5 gallons. It was great. So I think a lot has to do with the yeast. And, just sanitary practices and controlling fermentation temperature. You do those things, and you can ferment pretty much anything, and it tastes wonderful.
So yeah, I like it as well. I've used it in English beers, but I've also used it in IPAs, and it can be used as a house strain for a commercial brewery or a wide variety of beers at home.
Does it work well at temperature extremes, or do you get like a clean character from it at a low temperature, or different rates, or
it's going to be similar to other yeast strains, where the cooler you go or the higher you pitch, that you're going to suppress a little bit of the ester formation, and really what the difference that you're seeing with you're going to see subtle changes amongst the different strains, but the foundation is the same. That if you manipulate the variables, then you can kind of manipulate the amount of those products you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Is it a strain that requires more oxygen than other strains?
Or? No, I'd say it's the same as any other English strain or most English strains.
Okay.
So. Well, now one other thing that I've been playing around with is. I've always been enamored of the story of Alexander Rodenbach, and he wanted to open a brewery, so he went over to England to learn how to brew. This is 150, 200 years ago. And at the time, they were brewing porter. That's what they were brewing, is porter, porter, porter. And he learned to brew there. He took those brewing practices back with him to home and opened his brewery, and I believe that's the same way that they brew today. They've got the large wooden vats, they blend the beer, they do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that always struck me was there are no dark character grains in Rodenbach. It's kind of a deep amber color, but there's no roast barley in there as far as I can tell, or maybe there is, but it's such a tiny amount. It doesn't seem very porter-like to me. And I was wondering, did he find out that, the flavor just wasn't very good, and it was a mistake to do that, or was it just a lack of availability of materials? And I kind of assumed, well, it must be the latter. It was just difficult to get, these black patent malts at the time or whatever it might have been.
Could be.
So I went ahead and took it upon myself to brew a kind of a porter base using the Y Yeast Roselaire, and it turned out fantastic. You get this dark chocolate character, you get these cherry notes, all that stuff, the great stuff from that Roselaire blend, plus kind of those chocolatey aspects. And it really turned out well. And so it's a beer we're going to brew at Heretic. That's one of the next beers we're going to do. It's going to be called Miscreant. And yes, it essentially named it after you, Greg, in honor of Roselaire.
Exactly.
And the thing that struck me, though, was very quickly in this pilot batch, within 4 days, I tasted considerable amount of Brett. And within 7 days, there was a huge amount of Brett character in this thing. And I was wondering, could that be a function of the darker malts? Because I'd used it many times before just with a base without that that dark malt. And the base ingredients are really not that different. Mm-hmm. There's some crystal malts and things like that.
But that's a good question. I think that kind of goes back to, number one, to answer your questions, I don't know. And it, like I said, you're doing a great job of asking me questions I don't know the answer to.
That's my job.
But, yeah, exactly. But what I would say is that there's so little research with using Brettanomyces or the lactobacillus or the lactic acid bacteria in the brewing industry. There's very limited experimentation. Most of the experimentation and the published results have been done by large lager breweries over the last 50 years. And we're just now kind of reaching that point where people are starting to look at some of these other smaller aspects and starting to research them a little bit more. And I know Chad Jacobson, he's actually giving a Brett talk or just finished giving a Brett talk. That was fantastic. We've got people starting to look at what makes Brett tick. Why is it working differently in these different medias? And I don't think we have the answers to that yet. But I think we're going to get to it. And is it a pH thing? Is the Brett said to perform a little bit better at a lower pH? Now, what do you think the difference in the pH between a porter wort versus a general pale wort? Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's pretty small. I mean, we're probably talking about a tenth of the pH.
You never know with my sloppy brewing. You never know.
could be up to a half, but it's probably more like 0.2, 0.3.
Well, you'd see a half with a large addition of roasted malts.
Yeah, if you're
If you're not adjusting the water.
Yeah. If the water's soft, you know, low hardness.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
are you adjusting your water?
I throw some acid in there, you know, whatever it takes. A little this, a little that. Well, you know, and that's interesting. And that kind of leads me to another point now. That triggered something in the brain pan. We're doing our Taffel Bully, and that's a Belgian Pilsner, and it's around 4.9%. We ferment it out with a Belgian strain, and then we added the Brett culture that you sent us to that. But what we have kind of discovered over time is if you wait for the primary fermentation to finish, and then just add a dose of sugar in your Brett, you get Brett character much faster, and you get actually quite a nice Brett character in a short period of time. And I was thinking, well, maybe it's just because the other yeast aren't there and it's not competing or, you know, whatever factors are going on. But I wonder if it's, well, the beer is, the initial yeast has lowered the pH. Mm-hmm. And now you've adding the Brett when it's favored more with a lower pH. So maybe that's why that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we ran a number of studies. This is before the Cincinnati AHA, so that was probably what three years ago, right. Maybe. I looked at those parameters. So I was really curious: what should you inoculate and co-inoculate with a Saccharomyces culture? Inoculate by itself, inoculate post fermentation. Then I also looked at pitch rates to see what we could figure out. And what I came up with the best spread character was a co-inoculation at primary.
Right, I remember that. Yeah.
But I think it kind of took it one step further that I was getting some mixed results with the strain of primary yeast that I was using it with. And so if I was using it with a German ale strain versus a Chico strain, mm-hmm. then I was really getting some more byproduct or more of the ethyl phenol in the 1056, the American strain, than I was. And so I was wondering, is the German ale strain producing something that's inhibiting the yeast or mm-hmm. inhibiting the Brett? Or is it that the precursors that are producing those classic Brett flavors, the ethyl phenols that we're looking for, do we get those from the primary strain? Can we get some of those byproducts? You know, they're consuming some of the acids that are naturally present, making the vinyl phenol, which is the intermediate, mm-hmm. and then the Brett can come in and chew that up. And mm-hmm. so I was wondering, so say you take that, and I haven't done this test yet, but say you take a German wheat strain that already is a phenolic positive, it produces the vinyl mm-hmm. phenols, the 4-vinyl glycol, that clove that we're looking for,
right.
and then you add a Brett to that versus a German ale strain,
mm-hmm.
and are you going to have much more of that ethyl phenol faster? And I know this doesn't answer your question, but it kind of just got me off on a tangent.
No, it's
I think it's kind of interesting. Yeah. To look at it in that sense, and actually this kind of goes back to the Roselaire discussion that we were having, is that if you're using the Roselaire blend, mm-hmm. well, that Saccharomyces culture that we're putting in that is a phenolic positive culture,
mm-hmm.
and so you may be promoting some of that, some of those vinyl phenols in the Saccharomyces portion of that fermentation,
mm-hmm.
whereas your original method of using 1050. Well, whatever,
1056, yeah.
American ale, whatever version you're using,
that's not
phenolic positive, and so you're not going to get those vinyl phenols. And this is all, you know, this is all speculation in theory, but I think it's kind of an interesting point that
so,
if you're producing more of the food,
mm-hmm.
You're going to get more of the byproduct.
Right.
Now, why? Back to your point that okay, so you're adding that sugar dosage and the Brett afterwards in the post. I don't know. I hadn't run a
positive yeast that we used initially.
Right.
You know, so maybe that lends itself to what you're saying. And again, maybe, you know, the acidity also has but don't you get some phenolic compounds out of highly kiln malts?
I don't know. John?
Because you do. Because
John's a malt.
Because there are some smoke characters in highly kiln malts, and those are phenols, right?
Yeah, which would accentuate
So there must be some phenolic compounds in highly roasted malts. And so maybe that's what is lending itself to getting that Brett character so quick. Interesting.
We should talk to Chad. Jacobson would be a really good resource.
Okay.
We'll find him around here somewhere.
All right.
And ask about these things. You know, I remember years ago when I was brewing commercially that I did have an infection in a porter, that it came through in a porter, and I basically had some dirty lines, and so I had multiple beers running through this transfer line. Yeah, in the porter, I picked up the diastole much faster. Mm-hmm. So I've always thought that there's something that, whether or not it promotes it or it doesn't inhibit it, there's something about a dark, or maybe I just perceive
or
it.
Or it's a flavor or a combination.
Exactly, or something I perceive a little bit easier in a porter or a dark roasted roasted media versus a pale wort. You know, hops could have something to do with that. I mean, there's so many variables, but I have felt that there's something that promotes maybe not Brett or maybe Brett, but definitely bacteria in in a porter.
Mm-hmm.
All completely empirical and data at all to back that up. But it's something to think about.
I think there's something here that we're noticing, and you know, there's something, you know, ripe for research there. That if you get right on that, and maybe you could let me know before I do the next batch of heresy here.
Yeah,
have that for me maybe next week.
I'll get right on that.
Right. You just tape it to the outside of the Roselair package, and I'll go ahead and follow those instructions.
No, but I am interested in that study that you're talking about.
Right.
We can pull time samples out of your Roselair fermentation,
right,
and see what it's doing.
Okay,
great. It'll be pretty fun.
I'm looking forward to it. So I think that's, for me, I don't know about the rest of you out here, but I found that really fascinating. I really appreciate you being here with us, Greg.
Thank you.
I would love to have you on again if your time permits and all that.
Absolutely.
And not here at the conference, we're out of time, but, you know, there is a lot of opportunity.
Got a couple giveaways from Beersmith to do.
Nice.
Before you end the show.
Anybody like the Beersmith software? Good stuff.
Yeah. You know, he just launched Beersmith 2.0, which I know he's been working his ass off on because he tells me all about it. And but he gave me some key codes so we can give away a couple of programs. So however Jamil wants to do it, we'll give away a couple today and a couple tomorrow.
Trivia question for you. Which one of the three of us are the best looking?
They know what they're doing over there. Stroke that ego. You know what you're doing.
No. You're wrong, sir.
Do you think anybody remembers any of the facts about John Palmer?
Anybody remember a fact about John Palmer? What is John Palmer's middle name?
Rock Candy.
Rock Candy's good, but not quite.
Middle name, come on.
No one remembers it.
What is John Palmer's... That's a good answer, but it's wrong. What is John Palmer's favorite fruit?
Oh, that one's tough.
Huh? Rock Hudson. Oh, no.
Give him a key code. That's a good answer.
That is a good answer. All right.
Over there. Yeah.
What is John Palmer's favorite eating utensil?
The spork.
Very good. I'll tell you the true answer. Here's something you don't know about my good friend John Palmer that I know. His great grandfather was the inventor of the runcible spoon, also known as the spork. True story. All right. Thank you very much for attending the conference. Thanks for sitting in on this episode of Brew Strong. Especially very, very great thanks to Greg Doss, Y Yeast, and thanks to
glad to have you on the show.
You for making all that great products.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys. That was fun.
Awesome.
Take care.
All right.